Welcome to Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm health integrationist Lena Berman, and I come to you weekly with a critical, independent voice on the politics and practice of health. As it is with everything in the human body, bones get thinner and weaker as we age. This process is slowed by exercise and activity, and it's the use-it-or-lose-it paradigm. And this is true for both genders. Modern civilization has increased the rate of bone loss, judging from fossil remains from hunter-gatherer cultures. It may not only be our loss of nutrient density, sunlight, and physical activity, but increased exposure to oxidizers and xenobiotics, chemical pollution, and medications. Parents of the baby boomers believed that if children drank their milk, they'd be protected from bone loss later in life, but recent studies question this hypothesis. In fact, few studies find a positive relationship between children's calcium consumption and bone growth. So what's a body to do? Pharmaceutical companies are introducing numerous reabsorptive drugs to inhibit the body from reabsorption, but it might not surprise you to learn that the body already produces several very effective anti-reabsorptive molecules, and they work in concert with nutrients. Today's show, Bones and How to Keep Them Strong Forever Without Drugs. First, an editorial about this week's health news by Dr. Jeffrey Fawcett, Ph.D.
Thank you, Lena. What does healthy eating mean? On several occasions, I have a conversation that goes something like this. I tell someone I study health issues. They say, "Oh, you probably eat a healthy diet." They are then surprised to find out that not only am I not a vegetarian, but I get around 60% of my energy from fat and less than 15% from carbohydrates. Our culture has created an informational smog around what to eat that equates health with a vegetarian, low-fat diet. There's a reason for this, a vast campaign that works continuously on how we think and feel about what's healthy to eat. Last week, the media carried the results of an ongoing study intended to reveal the healthy effects of a low-fat diet. The San Francisco Chronicle was typical. Low-fat diets, not as effective as expected. Study sees little change in cancer heart risks. That's actually misleading because the study found no change, statistically speaking, in heart and cancer risks. I know this seems contrary to my point, but it's not. There were three specific articles published in the Journal of the American Medical Association about the heart and cancer risks faced by postmenopausal women and the effect of adopting a low-fat diet. As I said, they found none. But the researchers really wanted to, really, really, really wanted to. So much so that in newspaper interviews, the researchers and their supporters in the medical establishment said things like, "For those women who are following a low-fat diet, these results should encourage them to continue." And, "We don't want people to give up their low-fat food choices. This is not what the study said." No one was quoted as saying, "Gee, maybe we had it all wrong." I was even more interested in six postmenopausal women who were asked by the Chronicle whether this news would affect the way they eat. One said, "Yippee!" Another was angry about missing 30 years of hot fudge sundaes, years which included a heart attack and lung cancer. The other four stayed committed to low-fat life. I wondered what it would take to change those women's view of what makes for healthy eating. And so I come to a feature of the studies that didn't make it into the media. The low-fat dieters, the so-called intervention group, were put into active support groups facilitated by a nutritionist. The other group of women, the comparison group, received a low-fat nutritional guide. That's an intervention, too. It's information. Both groups were on a low-fat diet. One group had information and ongoing support, and the other got information only. Why didn't a third group get Dr. Atkins' diet revolution? And a fourth group, a support group for a hunter-gatherer diet? Because the research groups that get the money and headlines are there to create informational smog. The conventional media has trouble seeing through this smog. These are not the only sources of informational smog. In a perverse way, the studies suggest why. Despite ongoing support, the low-fat dieters were unable to reach the goal of 20% of their calories from fat. Backsliding occurred. The percentage of calories from fat crept up gradually over the course of the study. The dominant theme in these and so many other studies is that lifestyle choices increase heart, cancer, and other health risks. You make bad choices, so you die. No examination of the other forces at work that negated the effect of the support groups were examined. The valuable lesson here is that change happens when people support each other, and that support for healthy eating is likely not enough. We need to clear the informational smog and eat a hunter-gatherer diet. A transcript of this editorial is available on the blog at yourownhealthandfitness.org. I'm Jeffrey Fawcett. Take care of yourself.
Dr. Jeff Fawcett is an environmental economist, writer, and health educator. He produces this show with me and is primary author of our book, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Health. And now to our topic, bones and how to protect them. I'm going to be lecturing you today, and I want to give you a couple of initial cautions. One is that I'm often told when I come to you alone like this and bring you information that people feel overwhelmed by the amount of information. So what I would like to urge you to do is listen to the principles. Don't try to memorize what I'm talking about, and don't get attached to one piece of information because it sort of stimulates something that sounds personal to you. Listen to all of the information and notice that really what's going on in all of these lectures is that everything in the body works in concert with each other in a very intricate way, and that what we seek to get in terms of health is a kind of homeostatic balance in the body. And that's what I'm really talking about. The other thing I want to tell you is that much of this information is also available if you go to our website, yourownhealthandfitness.org, go to the Progressive Health Observer, which is the news, our quarterly newsletter, and look for the two articles. One is Healthy Bones from issue number 4, and the other is Young Bones and Milk from issue number 7. And a lot of the information is there, and there are resources at the end of each article. The first thing I want to say is that there is no substitute. I mean, there are many things that work in conjunction, as I said, but in the end, the body responds mostly to activity. So this is true in the brain, that your brain continues to work and be vital and grow new neurological pathways and new neurons, and all this stuff keeps happening when it's used. So the advice with everything in the body and the brain and even your spirit is use it. Use increases new growth, and this is nowhere more obvious than with bones, where exercise, mostly exercise that involves gravity. So although swimming, you are pushing against the water in the pool, and that creates some resistance, and resistance does create bone mass. In addition to that, there should be some walking and ideally some weightlifting as well. And what we see in studies is that even people who are very frail and elderly, if they're able to be trained and have somebody work with them, even using elastic bands or machines, that they will regrow bone, even very late in life. So a brief lesson in how our bones work. As children, our bones are modeling. As adults, they remodel. Osteoblasts break down bone, and osteoclasts break down bone, and osteoblasts create bone. So the blasts are creating bone. It's kind of counterintuitive. Bone formation occurs through a process involving protein, mostly collagen, which forms the bone matrix. Reabsorption is when the osteoclasts break down the matrix and the calcium phosphate crystals, releasing them into the blood. Our nerves, muscles, cells, and even our blood clotting rely on calcium. Our parathyroid orchestrates all of this by stimulating the kidneys to reabsorb calcium and stimulating production of vitamin D, which increases the absorption of calcium into your bones, drives it into your bones. Now, the caveat here is that while calcium helps the bones, too much calcium, and not balanced with the other minerals, too much calcium in your blood will have the reverse effect. Your body will begin to release the calcium through your urine. Did I say exercise was important? I'm going to say this over and over again. Exercise, exercise, exercise. Really stimulates all the right growth factors in your body. So calcium alone is not going to save you. It has to be in conjunction with other minerals. Minerals work in conjunction with each other. So a couple of principles that we've covered here is everything works together, minerals work together, and the body responds to use is how it maintains its growth. Now, there are other hormones besides the parathyroid hormones that are involved in maintaining and growing bone. All hormones are growth factors. This is why if you overdo it with a hormone, if you take more than a physiologic dose, or if you take them in an unbalanced way, or if your hormones themselves are unbalanced, these growth factors can contribute to cancer growth, although most of the recent studies about hormones and cancer actually show that they are protective rather than promoting cancer. In fact, the last study that was done with the WHI, with the Women's Health Initiative, with estrogen alone, a little piece of information that they never reported on was that there was almost a half the amount of breast cancer in the group taking the estrogen without even balancing it with the other hormones, which are incidentally very bone protective, that calcium alone reduced the amount of breast cancer almost by half. They didn't report on it because it was just a hair below statistical significance. So they never mentioned it. Hormones individuate. Your cells maintain individuation. They don't get recruited and become cancer cells. Cancer cells have no individuation. They just look like cancer cells. And where your normal cells will look like breast cells or liver cells or whatever, and hormones help to maintain that individuation. But in terms of the bone, as many people know, estrogen suppresses reabsorption. It isn't that it rebuilds bone, it's that if there's enough estrogen on board, when a woman goes through menopause, she will tend not to reabsorb her bone to use for minerals. If a woman didn't take estrogen right at menopause, she will lose some bone. If she starts taking estrogen later, it will suppress the reabsorption at that point, and then you can rebuild the bone through balancing the other hormones. And again, I'm going to say that word, exercise. Yes, exercising. The other hormones that are really important and probably even more important is testosterone, which is your androgenic. It's a male hormone, but both genders have quite a bit of it. It's very important for both genders, and it is the primary factor with bone growth. It is the primary bone builder. To some extent, progesterone also promotes bone building. In addition, it's odd to think of this, but thyroid is also very important. The reason I say it's odd to think of is because lots of doctors are very frightened of giving people thyroid because there was, I think, one or two studies that came out that showed that when people have an imbalance in their thyroid gland and they have a thyroid disease like Graves' disease or a transient hyperthyroidism where there's too much thyroid, that the body goes into a catabolic state and it begins to break down the bone for nutrients. So the assumption is that if you give someone thyroid, oh, you have to be so careful because what if you give them just a hair too much, they'll start losing their bone. Well, in fact, oddly enough, like everything else that I'm talking about, it's a question of getting it into balance and having the right amount. A physiological dose, even a robust physiological dose of thyroid, or either made in the body, which is endogenously, or taken exogenously if the thyroid gland isn't working well, will protect the bone, primarily because the active form of thyroid, which is converted from the form of thyroid your thyroid makes. Your thyroid makes T4, and the body has to turn it into T3. And T3, the active form of thyroid, is the one that prevents bone loss and helps with bone mass. So, lest you think that I'm talking about hormones during the show, what I'm really saying is that all of your sex hormones, your thyroid, and now I'm going to move on to the stress hormones, are involved in promotion and breaking down of bones. So if there isn't enough of the right hormones in balance to each other, particularly testosterone for maintaining bone mass, and balance between these hormones, there will be a lot of loss. Now, that said, I always advocate only the use of hormones that match the molecular structure of your body. So this means that they are not the conventional, all hormones are synthesized, but these, the ones that are brand names, some of them are bioidentical, a lot of them are not. So Premarin, for instance, is bioidentical to a horse. It has more estrogens in it than we make as humans. Some of the other brands are natural and some aren't. So there are synthetic, birth control pills are completely synthetic. Progestins like Provera are synthetic hormones. Bioidentical hormones, and I prefer them to go through the skin so they avoid the first pass through the liver, and balance their amounts. And then you can do all of this. You can do all of this, but if you don't exercise, your bones won't be maintained. So you still have to move around. And when I say exercise, incidentally, I don't mean that you have to do something sweaty and uncomfortable. You have to go to the gym. You can also put some music on in your living room and dance around the house every day for 20 minutes. If you did that and you dance around the house as vigorously as you're comfortable doing, you'll maintain some bone mass. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm doing a show today on bones and how to keep them strong forever without medication. Now, there's one hormone that is a very good player when it's doing its job properly. It's absolutely the hormone that you want on board, which is your main stress hormone, cortisol. Cortisol is essential for moving energy in the body so that in a stressful situation or in a situation where you're working really hard or learning and you need to adapt, or you're exercising, or you're making love and it's, you know, intense, anytime your body is in a kind of hyper situation where it has to respond and be at its best, cortisol is on board and it makes sure that the blood is going where it needs to go. But if you're under chronic stress or you don't recover from your events that you do throughout your life, and life is sort of one event after another, many times it's not even sort of planned. Somebody told me that life feels like a pop quiz all the time, like you came into class and your teacher sort of suddenly put a quiz and you're not ready. So life is like that, and so you're always learning and adapting, and cortisol is there to help you. But if you don't recover and you're under chronic stress and you know who you are, you're not sleeping enough, you know that you're stressed out is how you describe yourself, and maybe you're not sleeping well because you're so wired from being so tired, that high cortisol is catabolic. And catabolic, as I said before, is a situation where the body is breaking down the tissues and the bones to supply nutrients to deal with this unrelenting chronic stress in order to adapt. So again, once again, we're going back to this principle of you need the minerals, and if the minerals are not supplied, and if the nutrients that work with the minerals are not supplied, and you're under a lot of stress, the body's going to ask for more nutrients. And if it doesn't get them, it's going to break the body down to get them. It's going to break protein in your muscles down, and it's going to break down your bones. So it's catabolic, and it suppresses and lowers bone-forming effects of testosterone and progesterone. So you may have testosterone and progesterone. If you have too much stress on board, you're going to contest and lower your testosterone and progesterone and lower their effect. Stress destroys bone. Muscle and bone are inseparable. The more muscle you have on your body, the more bone you have on your body. And as I said, stress catabolizes both of them. So, once again, say it with me, exercise. One of the ways that you maintain muscle mass is exercise, and it's also maintaining bone at the same time. Now, stress doesn't just mean emotional stress. It means exhaustion. It means chronic illness. It's pollution. It's getting exposed to too many chemicals. Are you using a lot of chemicals around the house? Are you exposed to pesticides? Are you using highly fragranced products that are made with chemicals? What are you eating? Are you eating whole foods or are you eating processed foods with fats that have been damaged? Are you eating trans fats? Are you eating junk food? Pollution is a stress. So nutrient deficiencies are stress. Now, another thing about stress is that stress produces an acidic effect. So this is not something that people usually think of, but it's very often that, not just talking about heartburn, you know, what I'm saying is that literally if you tested your urine under periods of extreme stress, you would find that it was more acid than other times. So when you're involved in a stressful situation, or let's say during allergy season, if you have really vigorous allergies to the pollens, that's going to be a stressful situation. And your body's going to be more acidic. If you're under emotional stress, your body's going to be more acidic. And the acidity contributes to bone loss. And the interesting thing about this is that it's been known that a hyperacidic state is catabolic and breaks down the tissues in the bones. But it's been attributed to excess protein. It's been assumed because they measured the amount of protein in urine in both people who are eating vegetarian diets and people who are eating omnivore diets with animal protein. They saw a little more calcium being excreted, and the assumption was that it was because the protein acidifies the body and that the calcium is being used as a buffer. And so that's why the body is losing all its calcium. In fact, when they went back and redid some of these studies, what they discovered was that although animal protein eaters were urinating out more calcium, they were also absorbing more calcium because there was more calcium in the meat itself. And again, this is kind of not your normal way of thinking of meat. You don't think of meat as a source of minerals, but in fact, it is one of the most nutrient-dense foods in the world. This is why I feel sad when people start saying, well, I gave up red meat because it's bad for you, because in fact, red meat is one of the most nutrient-dense foods on the planet. If you have an objection to meat, because it comes from animals with faces and you identify with the animals, that's fine. I understand the way you feel, and everybody gets to make those choices. But if you're making the decision because you think that meat is a bad food, then I want to educate you about this. It is the most dense food in terms of nutrients. And it actually is the red meat that contains the highest amount of minerals. And there is calcium and zinc, which helps you absorb the calcium, and all sorts of other things, and vitamin B12 and carnitine, which helps your heart and your brain. So people who ate more meat were urinating more calcium because there was just more calcium around, but in fact we're absorbing more calcium as well. Now, you might ask, isn't it true that you can eat a diet that contributes to an acidity kind of situation? And the answer is yes, you can. If you eat tremendous amounts of protein and huge servings at a time, and in fact also if you eat large amounts of grains, cereal grains, and you don't balance these foods with vegetables and fruit, which we all know are cancer protective too, but if you don't balance them, you will have a hyperacidic reaction. You don't need to just eat meat, you know. You don't need to either just eat grains. You want to mix your foods together. If you are a grain eater, I'm not a great fan of grains because they have a lot of anti-nutrients in them. They have materials that are designed to protect them from being eaten to extinction because grains, after all, produce plants. And in order to avoid being eaten to extinction, they produce things that are slightly poisonous and anti-nutrient, and they block the absorption of minerals. So I think that people's carbohydrate needs vary, and you can get a lot of carbohydrates from fruits and vegetables. If you need more, there are tubers that are probably less of a problem in terms of an impact on your nutrient density. In any case, foods need to be balanced with each other, and foods that produce more acid, like protein, have to be balanced, or grains have to be balanced with fruits and vegetables, which are alkalinizing. And indeed, when people are under stress and they know themselves, you know, to be under stress, you can reduce some of the acidity by using things that are very simple, like sodium bicarbonate, you know, baking soda. A half a teaspoon in a glass of water will reduce them. Some people will take that after a very, very powerful exercise session, because exercise is a stress, and stress increases acidity. So sometimes they will deacidify themselves. Very simple to do. And as I said, the fruits and vegetables, although some of the fruits, obviously, and some of the vegetables are acid. And also, if you eat too much fruit, people who are having smoothies all day long instead of food, and having several fruits a day, so that they're having maybe five fruits a day or something like that, and lots of dried fruits, are consuming way too much sugar. And as you will discover as we go along, sugar is another thing that destroys the bones. So, what other principle did we learn here? We also learned that stress is catabolic. Stress is means a lot of different things. It's very individual. Sometimes it's good stress, but in all cases it requires adaptation and rest, and that when you're under stress, your body is more likely to break down your bones, and you need to balance stress again with the rest. And exercise reduces stress too, so dancing around the house or taking a 10-minute walk will reduce stress. And balancing your diet, acid to alkaline, by adding enough mostly vegetables with small amounts of fruit. Now, you heard us talk, you heard me talk here, us, I'm so used to being an us on the show, you heard me talk about vitamin D and its contribution mixed with the kidneys and whatnot. Vitamin D needs vary somewhat from person to person. It's usually you get vitamin D from exposing your skin to the sun. So one of the problems we have in our modern society, again, is that we don't go outside very much, and when we do, we put sunscreen on because we're afraid of skin cancer, which it looks like may be being caused more by ambient radiation levels from wireless technologies and cell phones, and on top of all the other kinds of radiation causing a real jump in melanomas. But vitamin D actually is protective, it maintains a level of very, very, very powerful protection against melanoma and against colon cancer, among other things. But you have to expose your skin to the sun. If you are a light, fair-skinned person, a sort of European-type person, about 15 minutes of sun between 12 and 2 during the high time of the day, during the time when the sun is really strong, during the summer and spring and whatnot, would be a sufficient dose to keep you humming along. If you're getting less than that, you need to take it as a supplement. If you are a browned or black-skinned person, your vitamin D is made much more slowly in the sunshine, and your needs are higher. It takes more like half an hour in the sun to make the same amount of vitamin D. So dosing with vitamin D, if you're brown, is much more important when you move away from sunny areas, or if you stop exposing yourself to the sun, to the skin, your skin to the sun. An average dose for someone who doesn't have some kind of really exotic autoimmune disease, which I've never encountered before, but somebody emailed me about this very esoteric immune disease that causes people to metabolize vitamin D, hold on to it. For most of the rest of us, even including people with other more common autoimmune problems, a medium dose would be anywhere from 2,000 to 4,000 units a day, constantly. If you want to back down, because you're, you know, again, if you're getting a lot of sun, you can take less. But if you're really not getting that kind of sun exposure, you're well to take 2,000 to 4,000 units. If you're worried about overdosing on D, which is hard to do, but you know, everybody's individual, there is a test called a 25-hydroxy vitamin D test. 25-hydroxy vitamin D, which will test a metabolite in your body and show you what your levels are. And you want to be slightly above the top of the range, or even, you know, the top of the range might be 60. You could go maybe up to 80 or 85, according to the research, which is mostly Reinhold Wieth, although other people are doing this research now as well. Individual vitamin D is individual, again, depends on how much. But what it does is vitamin D ionizes the calcium, prevents an acidic reaction, and drives the calcium right into your bones. So it means that you can actually take less calcium. And of course, if there's too much vitamin D and too much calcium around, the whole thing reverses and you end up urinating the calcium out, because calcium, if it's too high, is toxic too, just like anything too much, most things. Minerals are metals and you don't want them to get too high. I need to take a brief break. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. I'm doing a show today about healthy bones, how to keep them strong without drugs. And I urge you to please stay tuned. I'm going to take a 30-second break with some music, and I will be right back.
I've been doing some thinking about the nature of the universe. I found out things are getting better. It's just people that are getting worse. Well, ain't that just like living? Just like family strife. Ain't that just like living? Whatever happened to real life? I've been sitting around thinking about ultimate knowledge and such. Smartest man in the whole round world really don't know that much. Well, ain't that just like living? Blame it on your wife. Ain't that just like living? Whatever happened to real life?
Welcome back. This is Your Own Health and Fitness. I'm Lena Berman. There's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, our archive, CD copies, our book, and there's a whole lot more even, at yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out, information number 707-874-2772, and email admin, A-D-M-I-N, at yourownhealthandfitness.org, again, all spelled out. Where we left off is we were talking about vitamin makes it promotes the calcium, makes it go into your bones so that it deposits itself where it needs to go instead of getting spilled out. So vitamin D is terribly important, and if people are not getting enough sun, you really should add it in to your regime. Again, you can test if you're worried about the levels. I mentioned sugar and soft drinks also. Sugar is an individual issue, and when I say sugar, I'm not just talking about sugar, I'm talking about all of it. I mean, I'm talking about any concentrated, it doesn't matter whether it's rice syrup or honey or maple syrup. You know, everyone goes, oh, but what, you know, they're natural. And that doesn't matter. It's too much fruit, too much concentrated fruit juice. High fructose corn syrup is kind of added to everything now, so you have to kind of watch out, look at the label, see how much sugar is listed on the label. Sugar and soft drinks both destroy bones. In soft drinks, we have something called phosphoric acid, which binds to the calcium in the gut and interferes with the calcium uptake. So it really interferes. Sugar disrupts calcium metabolism. And because the body tries to maintain a balance between calcium and phosphorus in the blood, the sweetener metabolism contributes to an imbalance, and the body thinks that there's too much calcium, and it encourages you to start urinating it out. So all those nice cola drinks are really high in phosphorus. Soft drinks in general are just, and it doesn't matter whether they're, you know, if you're drinking the unsweetened versions that have horrible artificial sweeteners in it, which are, that's a whole other show, you know. Either way, there's too much phosphorus in these drinks. In addition, I should tell you, you may not realize this, but these highly carbonated beverages are extremely acidic. And we know that acidity contributes to bone loss too, that, you know, short spurts of it, so that you can, here comes the word again, exercise. If you want to do some weightlifting, it might make you more acidic, but you cool out afterwards. So there's that kind of thing. But when you're drinking lots of carbonated beverages, even carbonated water, you know, constantly, you're going to be acidifying yourself a lot too. So watch out for that. It should be no surprise to anyone listening to this show that medications contribute to bone loss. The National Osteoporosis Foundation lists which is a fairly conventional foundation, lists these medications to begin with. Glucocorticoids. Now, those are artificial or synthetic cortisone. So cortisol is your natural anti-inflammatory. It's your stress hormone, right? And it reduces inflammation. So it's given to people when they have inflammation, or when they're if somebody has a really bad infection, they'll give it to them because it reduces inflammation and infection. Along with contributing to bone loss, it's going to suppress your endogenous, that means inside your body, production of your native cortisol. So, but anyway, it contributes to bone loss, anticonvulsants, and a lot of people think they're on antidepressants, and they're actually on anticonvulsants. In fact, they give anticonvulsants a lot to people with headaches, too. So anticonvulsants reduce bone loss. And please remember that when I say bone loss, I'm not just talking to women here. Men have problems with osteoporosis as well, and it creeps up on them in a kind of frightening way. They don't even realize it's a possibility. Antacids that have aluminum in them contribute to bone loss. Methotrexate, which is a cancer, you know, it's a chemotherapy agent, but it's also given to people with autoimmune diseases and other things. It contributes to bone loss. Cyclosporin A, which is an immunosuppressant. I don't really like any of these drugs very much, although I suppose if you have cancer, chemotherapy is kind of an individual decision. Heparin is one of those things where if it's given in a very low dose and it's used correctly, it might be useful. It's a blood thinner for somebody who has really bad clotting factors, but it contributes to bone loss. And chlorestramine is a cholesterol-lowering drug, another thing I don't like to see have happen because cholesterol is there for a reason, also reduces bone loss. Now, what they didn't even mention here in this list is fluoride, which is in many people's municipal water supplies, is terrible in terms of bone loss. It creates a kind of, it looks as the bones are getting stronger, but they become very brittle and they break very easily. So fluoride is a big problem with bone loss. And there's another one, and I'm always shocked by how many people still smoke cigarettes. Cigarettes and tobacco, and it doesn't matter whether you're smoking the sort of more natural or you're rolling your own, those may have less added chemicals to the tobacco, but just the act of smoking and the tobacco itself with the nicotine and all the rest of it is very poisonous. It's really almost the least of it is causing bone loss. It's also destroying your heart muscle along with your lungs and ruining your skin. But you will lose your teeth over time if you're a cigarette smoker. Eventually, your gums will begin to recede back and your teeth will begin to be loose. People vary. You know, some people are, you can't kill them. You know, you can do everything and just nothing will kill them, and they get away with it usually until they're elderly and then they start to suffer. But most people who smoke lose bone at a great rate. So if you already did it, it's all the more reason to sort of get on board with the, here it comes again, exercise and the nutrients and the balanced minerals and deacidifying your body, eating healthy foods, et cetera, that we've been talking about. Cigarettes destroy the bone really, really very aggressively and really do it. And oddly, so does alcohol. Now, the alcohol was discovered, and we're talking about lots of alcohol. We're not talking about one drink a night. We're talking about abusing alcohol. They discovered the alcohol when they were looking at Eskimos, who by all rights should have had really fabulous bone mass, because one of the other things that helps with bone mass are the essential fatty acids like the omega-3s. Very good for bones when they're balanced with other fats. And the Eskimos should have been just great, and they had all this bone loss. And then when they controlled for alcohol abuse, they discovered that that was the problem, that the Eskimos that were abusing alcohol had bone loss and the others did not. Now, there are a few other medications that are in common use that don't directly cause bone loss, but they interfere with nutrients that help with the bones being remodeled. One of them is these two interfere with vitamin K, which I'm going to talk about in a moment. and that is aspirin and Tylenol. They interfere with the bone modeling effects of vitamin K, which you're going to discover is something you're going to want to go out and buy, or you're going to start eating spinach salads, either one, I'm not sure. So those are the big ticket ones of the medications that interfere with bone modeling and contribute to bone loss. Too many stimulants can contribute too, for obvious reasons, because you're pushing yourself into a stress state, into a catabolic state, probably not resting when you're tired. Doesn't mean you can never have a cup of coffee or a cup of tea if it's organic. It means that if you're using those substances instead of resting, so that you're constantly exhausted, you're doing that very thing of producing a state of chronic stress. And that contributes, not directly, but indirectly. So let's look for a minute at milk. Why isn't milk working? Look like, you know, just in, if nothing else, in childhood, you give kids a lot of milk. And then there was the argument, well, wait a minute, you know, why should we, other animals get weaned and they don't need the milk, so why do we need all that milk and calcium? What's the problem here? And there have been fights back and forth. Well, there's a couple of things about milk. I mean, if you're not milk intolerant, which most people are, actually a lot of people have milk intolerance. And incidentally, people who have mild intolerance sometimes find if they drink raw milk, real honest God raw milk, they can manage it. But for most people, milk is very difficult to digest after a certain point, and many groups are actually allergic to it. But the other problem with milk is there's a real imbalance in minerals in milk. It has enormous amounts of calcium and very little magnesium. And calcium doesn't really do its job very well without magnesium. Calcium is a, among other things, it's a vasoconstrictor, so it constricts your blood vessels. So that too much calcium, not enough magnesium could be a culprit in high blood pressure. Magnesium dilates the vessels. Too much magnesium and you get the runs. Think milk of magnesia. But, you know, everybody, again, very dose dependent. I can't tell you go out and take this much because you're very individual and you're going to have to discover on your own the right balance. But milk, if you're doing dairy products, some extent cheese too, you're going to need a little extra magnesium added in. Pasteurized milk has either no vitamin D or they, in many cases, add synthetic vitamin D. Synthetic vitamin D is very toxic at high doses, and this is where the impression that the medical establishment has had for a long time, that vitamin D is really dangerous. It's because there was a mistake that happened many years back where they added, you know, I don't remember how much more, you know, hundreds of times more vitamin D3 is natural, D2, to a bunch of milk, and people had this terrible toxic reaction. Now, that said, what we know is that it takes about 40,000 units of synthetic vitamin D taken for 2 weeks solid before someone gets a toxic reaction. So that's really not going to happen from supplementing with 2,000 to 4,000 units of vitamin D a day of natural D3. This happened with the synthetic, and it happened at these high doses. We've never seen in any of the studies a toxic reaction to D3 taken in the amounts that I described. Now, that said, there are people who have individual DNA mutations or different factors that will change the way that they function with vitamin D. So if you want to be prudent, you can up your vitamin D, do it for 6 months to a year, and get your levels checked. You know, just be prudent. The other thing about milk is that everybody is on, as Dr. Fawcett mentioned at the top of the show, really has gotten very attached to this idea of low fat. We all think that if we just can have less fat, since it has all those nasty calories, that means we can eat a whole bunch of other stuff like smoothies. But it has no fat, so it must be okay. Well, turns out you can't absorb the calcium from the milk without the fat. So, gee, well, that's kind of why are we doing this? Indeed, you actually need saturated fat, not polyunsaturated vegetable oils. You need saturated fat to absorb the fat-soluble vitamins that are essential for bones, so vitamin A and vitamin E and vitamin K, fat-soluble You need them, can't absorb them without saturated fat, actual saturated fat. Not damaged fat, just regular butter or clarified butter like ghee or coconut oil, or you can use oils that have a combination, like olive oil is a combination of monounsaturated and saturated, or palm oil, which is Spectrums has a organic shortening that's palm oil. That's wonderful. Have to have it to get those fat-soluble vitamins into your body. Okay, so now vitamin K. Vitamin K. Every time I tell somebody to take a high-dose vitamin K, they say, oh, but it's bad. It causes clotting. So I'm going to explain that in just a moment here. First of all, I'm just going to let you know this is your own health and fitness. I'm Lena Berman, and I'm doing a show on healthy bones, how to keep them strong without drugs. Vitamin K, fat-soluble vitamin K. Yes, vitamin K is in greens. It's in spinach. And no, spinach is not dangerous to eat because of the oxalic acid, because there's vitamin K in it. If there wasn't any vitamin K in spinach, you would get too much oxalic acid, and the oxalic acid could cause kidney stones. But yay for K, because it's in there, it's in the spinach, it balances the oxalates and doesn't cause any problems. And it also gives you a lot of K. Although you may not want to eat tons of spinach all the time, spinach also gives you a lot of trimethylglycine, which, while it's a good player for some people, also for some people doesn't feel good. So balance in all things. But you can supplement with vitamin K. Let me explain a little about it before we talk about the clotting issue. It's important for the health of all strength and connective tissues. If there's not enough vitamin K around, the blood vessel linings become stiff. And when that happens, your systolic blood pressure, which is the high number, you know, if somebody is 115 over 75 or 120 over 80, it's the high number. The systolic blood pressure gets really high. So you see this real sharp, you see someone with a blood pressure of 150 over 80, where there's a huge split between the high number and the low number. This is very often a sign of a vitamin K deficiency. It is thought of in terms of clotting, as I said, and doctors often warn people against taking it. Now, I have to explain that the reason this happens mostly is because it is amazing how many people are on blood thinners. Again, your body may not. There's so many different ways to figure out how to thin your blood. If you have a hormone imbalance and there's not enough testosterone, again, remember that, testosterone bone builder. If there's not enough testosterone around your blood is going to be very clotty. If there's too much estrogen in both genders, men can pick up extra estrogen too, and it's not balanced by the testosterone, and in women with the progesterone, your blood gets clotty. There's a lot of reasons for the blood to get clotty. So you don't always have to take blood thinners. And there are also a lot of nutrients that thin the blood, but that's another show. Vitamin K on its own has never been shown in studies to cause clotting events, even in very high doses. So I don't worry about it. You make your own mind up. The way that vitamin K works is fairly, it's like a little chemistry class. I called Dr. Richard Cunyon last night, and he explained it to me, and I've reduced it down, I think, to a point where it won't make you pass out. Vitamin K turns into something called carboxyglutamate. And the carboxyglutamate is what holds the calcium and delivers it to the cells where it forms the bone builders. And the bone builders are osteocalcin and bone matrix GLA protein. These things, the osteocalcin and the bone matrix GLA protein, these things are like the armature for people who have done sculpture. The armature is like chicken wire, you know, armature or frame. You know, if you're building something and you make a chicken wire frame, and then you put, like if you're doing something made out of plaster Paris, or you're doing with the paper mache, and you have an armature. So it creates the armature, and then the calcium deposits and builds over the top of it. It also has to be smooth, and the K contributes to that. So it's very important for the bone building, and it's very important, again, for the health of your blood vessel linings. And so it contributes in a positive way to the health of your blood vessels and your blood clotting. Again, aspirin and Tylenol depletes vitamin K, and I'm almost afraid to even mention this other thing, but I'll say it and just say to you, please don't attach to this and get freaked. But for people who are on megadoses of vitamin A, if their liver's okay and they're using it, say, for emphysema or some kind of pulmonary problem, and they're taking a short period of extra vitamin A or something like that, like you're going above 25,000 a day. They say you're fighting a cold, you go up to 50,000 for a while, or you're taking 100,000 for a short period of time and your liver's okay. That can contribute vitamin K. So if you do that, you take extra. Also, vitamin A, if you raise up your vitamin A, you have to raise up your D, because they work in conjunction, and if you don't, you can have some bone loss that way. So A and D together, always together, if you're trying to do that. Vitamin E in extremely, you know, some people are taking 1,200 IUs of vitamin E. They have the courage to do that despite all the trashing that the conventional media has done on vitamin E. There's nothing wrong with vitamin E. It's good stuff. Not everybody needs that much. Sometimes 400 to 800 is fine. But if you're taking a high dose of E, you're going to need some extra K. And if you're somebody that has a clotting factor that requires the use of a fairly high doses of niacin, you'll need some extra K there too. Again, spinach will give you some. Now, one of the things that's hard about vitamin K is it's difficult to find it in high enough doses. Most of the time when you find it separated out from other vitamins, like because most multivitamins don't even have K in it, what you find is a 100 microgram tablet. And you'd have to take, if you really wanted to get your dose up, you have to take 10 of those or more to get even 1 milligram. So that's kind of, there is a product, I don't want it to sound like I'm doing an ad for this, but I know that there are some companies that are making liquid vitamin K where you can get a higher dose, but one of the best ones that I've found is through Life Extension, and I don't have any connection to them. Although if they're listening and they want to send us money, that's fine too. But they make something called Super K, and it's a 10 milligram dose of vitamin K. And I know that Dr. Cunyon has used this in his practice for a long time. I take it. It's wonderful stuff. So if you really can't find it, you can find it from them, and they're on the web, Life Extension. And greens and some vitamins have K in it as well. Another thing to remember about all of this is we're talking about these bone builders. You know, we're describing this bone building that goes on. And there's another concept here that's very important to remember. And that is that part of what you're doing, I mentioned this early on, is you're increasing the amount of collagen, which is a protein, because collagen turns into cartilage. Cartilage becomes bone. And interestingly, this is the science behind glucosamine. Glucosamine is a small enough molecule that it can go into the joint structures and feed this collagen building machine, this engine. So that's the way that glucosamine is supposed to work. Does it work? I don't know. I've looked at the studies. It looks good. I take it. I know some people take it and they feel better. The thing to remember with glucosamine is that there are two things. One is that the HCL version of glucosamine tends to be a little stronger than the sulfite. The sulfite version tends sometimes to be diluted with salt, you know. But in my experience, somebody has to start with a dose of 1,000 milligrams twice a day for several months before they notice that they're less achy or their bones feel better, whatever. I think it's a good prophylactic thing to do. I take the higher dose because I actually, here comes that word again, are you ready? Exercise a fair amount. And I'm a mature person now, so I'm taking it because I feel safer doing it. Some people take it, say, absolutely notice no difference at all. So you have to decide for yourself, but that is how it works. I have observed that in some brittle diabetics, glucosamine sometimes raises their blood sugar, and I don't know whether it's because it's glucosamine, glucose. So I don't know how that works. I don't know that chemistry. But glucosamine, a couple thousand, and you know, 1,000 twice a day would be the dose. A chondroitin works in a similar way, and there's lots of controversy about chondroitin. Chondroitin does have some heart protective effects, too, if you want to take both. I don't see a problem. Chondroitin would be about 600 milligrams twice a day. Now, as I said before, I'm going to end with this. There is no substitute for exercise. It is the case that if you exercise too much and you don't recover, you're creating a stress in your body. So all you marathoners out there and you triathletes and stuff, heed what I'm saying. Make sure that your mineral status is very high, that you're replacing your minerals and all of them, the trace minerals, because boron and manganese, all of these, you know, now we find out strontium, which is in kelp, is very important. So all of these minerals are absolutely essential. People who exercise a lot tend to lose iron if they're, if women who are still menstruating, but even men can do that, and iron should be replaced again by red meat and not by iron supplements, which are metal, if possible, or some kind of herbal supplement that's not a metal that doesn't, you know, give you problems with your gut and oxidizing. But exercising and incidentally, just I'll throw this out too. The research on exercise, which I watch fairly regularly, shows also that people who exercise, is a dose response curve, right? The right amount of exercise, which is a little more than moderate, it's vigorous but not ridiculous, and it's enough, it's the right amount for someone to be able to adapt and recover from so that they are at a pretty good physical state. They're in a pretty good state, and they maintain it, and it's not like just a little walk here and there. It's, you know, the people live longer, really live longer, and really have a very much improved aging process. Really improves everything about their aging, because everything's working. It improves, it reduces cancer risk, improves brain function, and it protects the bones. It's just no kidding. But if you overexercise, and overexercise is a very individual thing. Only you can know if you're overexercising, or maybe your best friends, or maybe your healthcare professional says, hey, you know what, you're not recovering, you're tired all the time, you've got all kinds of symptoms of you're not sleeping, you know, blah, blah. But overexercising doesn't increase your life. It's a stress. So balance, balance, balance. So that takes us just about to the end of the show. I think what I've tried to get you to see is that everything that works for the bones works in concert. The hormones work in concert. They have to be balanced with each other. The minerals work in concert. The fat-soluble vitamins, the amount of things that you're eating in your diet, the acid to alkaline balance, all of these things are a handshake. It's like two dancers on a dance floor, partner dancing with the right amount of pressure in their hands, opposing each other, works very well. So that about wraps it up for today. And I want to thank you for listening. I'm Lena Berman. There's information about Your Own Health and Fitness, our guests, our practice, a free stream of this week's show, CD copies. All of it's at yourownhealthandfitness.org, all spelled out. You can phone us at 707-874-2772 or email us at admin@yourownhealthandfitness.org. Your Own Health and Fitness is produced by Lena Berman and Jeff Fawcett, PhD. Remember, being informed not only protects your health, it protects your freedom. And you can visit us on Facebook at Your Own Health and Fitness or on the book site, Too Much Medicine, Not Enough Help. So thanks so much.